Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and I am joined today by Yusei Koshal.
How you doing, my man?
You know, I'm just kind of chilling out here in Salt Lake City. Finals are coming up. I've been a little bit stressed about that, and was a little bit stressed about one of my fantasy leagues for a second, but I got through. I won't have to play in, you know, the Losers Bowl and have to do a punishment, so that's pretty sweet. I don't know if I'll go back to that league next year, but I've had a pretty okay week overall. What about you? How are finals going for you?
Finals are going great. I mean, they start next week, you know, so everyone's scrambling around, et cetera, just preparing, trying to get in last-minute assignments to get their grades up. So, yeah.
Absolutely. So, the one thing I want to cover before we get into the games is just a little bit of Yusei Koshal. How's he feeling about the Christmas season?
Good, you know, obviously, you know, that's some time of year because everyone always seems to be in a good mood, so it's going to be fun. You know, I think we'll be traveling for a bit, but yeah. So it's just nice to be in college and have a month off, you know, because I have tons of older cousins, and I remember when I was in high school, like, I'd have 2 weeks off, and they'd get, like, a month and a half off, and I'd be like, can I have that? And they're like, yeah, you can, but once you get to college, you're going to have to study like crazy, and then you get that month off.
Yeah, for real, for real. And then most of the time, you're working that month anyways, yeah. So it's not super time off heavy. Now, that was a very spur-of-the-moment question you said. I did not actually have anything to transition to, so I just transitioned to a question about Christmas because I didn't really have anything else to add, but for some reason I talked myself into a corner, just so our listeners know. Yeah, Christmas is cool. Let's talk about football though, because football's cool. I love football more than I think I love Christmas, even though Christmas is cool. I think that we should start with some news.
What do you think? That sounds good to me. I mean, news is always fun to start with on anything, you know?
Right, for real. All right, again, another awful transition. This is just an episode full of awful transitions, but hey, that's okay. That's the way we're living in today's day and age. Lack of transitions, lack of smooth transitions. Let's start with the big news. Mike McCarthy fired in Green Bay. Your thoughts,
well,
you
this
said.
Is a move that I think was widely expected. Mike McCarthy, obviously, Ian Rappaport reported on Twitter, you know, moments after he was fired, saying that the Green Bay Packers were indeed planning to move on from him. And it was really, there was no question of if they're going to move on from him. It really came down to when are they going to move on from Mike McCarthy. And you look at the last few weeks in Green Bay, the way things have transpired, you know, McCarthy's comments where he basically blew the game in Seattle, saying that they were trying to play the numbers, and then just losing to the Arizona Cardinals at home, a 2-9 team, a game in which they were heavily favored, and it could have easily been a blowout. McCarthy lost that. I mean, I was looking up the Packers schedule last night, just doing some basic analysis, and in their last six games, they're 1-5, and they have yet to win a game on the road this year. And I know some people are going to say, oh, well, it's injuries. Well, more of it falls on the head coach's shoulders.
Yeah, more of it does fall on the head coach's shoulders, and we'll talk about it later, but I believe Rodgers deserves more of a blame than he's been getting. Obviously, this move was coming. McCarthy hasn't been great the past few years. Packers fans have gotten kind of fed up with him. But I certainly don't think this is the last we'll see of Mike McCarthy. I think that he will be a head coach in the NFL next
year.
Yeah,
it's interesting because, you know, when I write for FanSided, you know, I have some colleagues that write at one Browns website, and I was talking to some of them on Twitter. And they told me, they're like, because they have their own Brown sources, and they told me, they're like, hey, the Browns are making a push to sign Mike McCarthy. And I think you can see why, because Mike McCarthy, you know, he worked with John Dorsey for a few years. They're very, very familiar. And I think that that could really work out for this team. I'm not saying it's going to be like an Andy Reid type resurgence where he's going to go in and fix the Browns up like Andy Reid fixed the Chiefs up, but it could certainly be a marriage that works out between the two sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think the Browns want to go out and hire McCarthy. He doesn't really do anything super special with the offense, and I think that's what they want, a more forward-thinking guy. At least I would want a more forward-thinking guy with Baker Mayfield than Mike McCarthy is, but he definitely has the experience to turn Cleveland into a team that can get to the playoffs next year. So that's an interesting kind of turn of events to watch to see if McCarthy lands in Cleveland. As far as the Green Bay job goes now, it's obviously the most attractive head coaching vacancy because you have Aaron Rodgers, one of the better quarterbacks of all time, and you can really mold an offense and be a Super Bowl contender right away if you make the right moves. Who do you think might take over that job? I haven't really kept my ear super close to the streets for a lot of coaching candidates. For me, maybe the one name that sticks out a little bit is Josh McDaniels, but outside of that, I can't really think of anyone off the top
Well,
of my head.
that it's interesting, and the thing is, for our listeners that aren't, don't keep up with news 24/7 like some of us who are not always talking sports. The thing is, at this time of year, I feel like you never really know what's real because you always hear potential names at head coach tossed around. I mean, you go back to last year, there was talk of current Titans offensive coordinator, and last year he was the Los Angeles Rams offensive coordinator, Matt LaFleur, potentially landing a head coaching job. Josh McDaniels, like you just said, he's been a guy that's been in the head coaching rumor mill for the last few years. One interesting name that I did hear today, though, because this guy's a head coach just a few miles away from me, is Northwestern's Pat Fitzgerald. Apparently, and this is per Roto-World, they said that Green Bay would potentially give him a look. And that's a really interesting name because Fitzgerald has really done an excellent job at Northwestern University, which is located in Evanston, Illinois. But it's unlike, I don't think that he makes a jump. So at this point, it's just difficult to see who is going to be the next head coach of the Packers, especially considering the fact that this is going to be a decision that's made solely by the front office. They said today, they're like, listen, Aaron Rodgers is going to have no input in the head coaching search whatsoever.
Which is the dumbest
Right.
thing I've ever heard,
Right,
I
you
think.
have to. Oh, go ahead.
I just feel like Rodgers, like he deserves more respect than that. Like he's your franchise quarterback. Like let him have a say in who your next head coach is going to be. He needs to respect the guy that they bring in. He needs to want to work with the guy that they bring in. And honestly, if they leave him out of the picture completely, if I were Aaron Rodgers, I'd want to get out of Green Bay. It seems like they're trying to alienate him almost. And they did it with firing the quarterback's coach and getting rid of Jordy Nelson. And I don't think they show enough respect to Aaron Rodgers in that franchise for as over the past few episodes I've been, for as much kind of crap I've given Aaron Rodgers over the past few shows, and I stand by that. I believe he deserves some of the blame for what's going on in Green Bay. You need to let him be more involved in the coaching search, or else you're not going to get a guy that is copacetic with the arguably one of the better quarterbacks of all
Right,
time.
it's like I saw the report on my phone today and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, listen, any NFL franchise, knows that to be successful, we have to get our quarterback's input because without a quarterback, we know we're not going to become that perennial Super Bowl contender. I mean, all you have to do is look in the NFC North and look at the Chicago Bears because when the Bears were looking at hiring a new head coach back in January, they legitimately hired they Ryan Pace, the general manager, said, "Hey, listen, there's a chance Mitchell Trubisky will have input on who the next head coach of the Bears is." And I know for a fact that they more than likely ended up taking Trubisky's advice because they hired Matt Nagy, a guy who was so familiar with Mitch Trubisky. And just transitioning or just a little bit talking about Packers news. If you're a Packers fan, you sort of have to be I get that these guys are happy that Mike McCarthy is finally fired, because I know, two of my best friends are Packers fans. So, but the reality of it is this Mike McCarthy firing is likely coming at the worst time possible, because this January, I don't see many attractive head coaching candidates that could replace him. Obviously, some names and jobs are going to open up, but if you look at the level of talent last year that was in the head coaching pool in January, Matt Nagy, Frank Reich, they had John DeFilippo there. There were all these, offensive minded guys that for a fact any one of them paired with Aaron Rodgers could turn the Packers into arguably the best offense in the NFL. I really think that the Packers, they're going to really have to search deep this year to find that next, Sean McVay or Matt Nagy or Frank Reich or whoever it may be.
See, I disagree with you on that one. I feel like the Packers, the timing, I know a lot of people had a problem with it, but I think the timing was perfect because now you have time to start searching for NFL head coaching candidates. You have a head start on everyone else, and I don't think that candidates are going to be an issue because honestly, you think of names that are kind of far out there, like there are tons of NFL head coaches who would quit their current contracts to get a shot to work with Aaron Rodgers. Like, there are a ton, and like one that kind of makes me think is like one of the Harbaughs might be interested. Or even if you wanted to extend deep into that college search, like you were saying, like Lincoln Riley, everyone's talking about maybe a reunion with Baker Mayfield, why not Lincoln Riley paired up with Aaron Rodgers? And, or why not Bruce Arians, who, even though he said he'll only take the Browns job, I bet Bruce Arians would go work with Aaron Rodgers. I feel like they're finding head coaching candidates to coach an established franchise like the Green Bay Packers with an all-time quarterback is not going to be as hard as we may think.
It's interesting because apparently, according to NFL Update on Twitter today, that's a very good account to follow. Is they basically said there, or whoever runs that account basically put out a tweet that said, well, Bruce Arians says that he wouldn't even come back for the Packers job. So it's going to be really interesting to see what transpires over the next few months for the Green Bay Packers, because they just handed Aaron Rodgers a massive extension. One of the richest contracts, obviously, in NFL history. And, they do have some young talent on the roster, but they need more talent. They need to find an edge rusher. And biggest thing of all, they need to find a good coach that knows how the game of football has evolved, over the last 3, 4 years. And offensive, you have to have an explosive offense to compete now. And I think that if they do that, then they're automatically back to being Super Bowl contenders next year.
I think that one interesting thing to look at is a tweet from one of my PSF colleagues, Brian Willis here, who tweeted out some possible head coaching candidates that he'd be interested in to see with Aaron Rodgers. And here are a few, and I want to see which one stands out to you. Gary Kubiak, who, even though he's retired from coaching, is still very involved in the Broncos organization. And I think a lot of credit goes to him for how gangbusters this draft class has been. One of the Harbaughs, he said, Bruce Arians, Jack Del Rio, Hugh Jackson, John DeFilippo, Matt LaFleur, Chris Richard, who I'm not sure who Chris Richard is. Is that the Northwestern guy?
That is not the Northwestern guy. The Northwestern guy, is Pat Fitzgerald.
Oh, see, this is a li I misread this. That was a list of names Brian did not want to see with the Packers head coach. Here's the name that he does want to see: Josh McDaniels, Eric Bieniemy, Chiefs offensive coordinator. That's an interesting name to kind of watch. Pete Carmichael, Lincoln Riley, Jeff Tedford, Zach Taylor, Chris Peterson, which would be interesting to have him coming from Washington. Or he said Cliff Kingsbury, but Cliff Kingsbury, of course, just barely signed that deal with USC, confirmed today. Of that list of names, who do you think might be most likely to land the Packers head coaching job, if you had to make a guess?
You know, I would really like to see the Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy land it, because Andy Reid, you know, people, guys who have worked under Andy Reid, you know, they have just been so successful wherever they go. You know, I think you had both the Harbaugh brothers, Matt Nagy, Ron Rivera, Doug Peterson, Philadelphia. That, or even I think Pete Carmichael would be a really interesting name, because he's another guy that's been in head coaching rumor mills for the last few years now, and he has, you know, as good as a play caller as Sean Payton is, Pete Carmichael does not get enough credit for the work that he does as the offensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints. And, you know, just one, I know, interesting name that's on there that I'm going to discuss for like 30 seconds here. Josh McDaniels of the New England, who's currently offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. See, I'm wary of hiring New England assistants, and I don't know if it's just me, because there seems to be a trend. Whenever these guys go and they get, like, bigger jobs or something, they're always, you know, people always act like, oh, we got, like, the next great head coach or whatever, and then sometimes they're total flops. And I know you remember this, Eric, because this was about 8 or 9 years ago, but when the Broncos hired Josh McDaniels, you know, he was only there for a year and a half despite starting the season 9-0 that year. I think it was like the 2008 or 2009 season, you know, like 8-0 or something. And then by like week 5 or 6 of 2010, he was fired. So McDaniels, he's one of those head coaches where, or head coaching candidates, where he could really hit it out of the park and things could be very different from the first time he was head coach, or he could be a complete flop. And I'm going to go with the latter, just because I don't think he's got what it takes to be head coach in the NFL.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our next topic of news. Kareem Hunt was cut by the Chiefs Saturday after a video of him assaulting a woman in a Cleveland hotel was leaked by TMZ. Obviously, I think we can both agree that the Chiefs made the right move here. My question relates more to football here. I watched the Chiefs-Raiders game last night on Game Pass, and I don't think the Chiefs were able to run the ball as well. But do you think that they'll be able to adapt with Spencer Ware and now bringing back Sharkhandrick West to get their running game back kind of near the speed that it was before Hunt was cut?
Absolutely. You know, Spencer Ware, Sharkhandrick West, I know that these are two guys that were obviously in Kansas City 1 or 2 seasons before Kareem Hunt, so you obviously know that they have the familiarity with the system that Andy Reid's running, with how he does things. You know, obviously, like you said, that first game against the Raiders without Kareem Hunt wasn't what anyone anticipated it to be, because I did briefly watch the replay of that game as well. But I think, you know, if it's one thing about Andy Reid's teams, is that oftentimes when they mess up on one thing, usually the next week, for the most part, they do correct it. So I'm interested in seeing them this week and how they, you know, and to see if they can get that running game up to speed.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting situation in that backfield. I thought Spencer Ware looked really good, even though he got some criticism from the play calling team on that game. I thought he looked good in general. He didn't have gangbusters numbers, but he looked explosive enough, and really that game was just a product of Travis Kelce going off and having a career day, and Patrick Mahomes playing really well, as he always does. The last piece of news we got, Colt McCoy last night. The Redskins just have terrible quarterback luck. Also broke his fibula. Mark Sanchez is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL for the next 4 weeks. Like, I never thought I'd say that sentence again in my life, but here it is.
Yeah, you know, it's so Mark Sanchez starting in the NFL, I mean, he's not the best football player in the world, but he is a really good coach. You know, which is why he ran the Chicago Bears scout team last year. I think that, You know, the Red, like you said, the Redskins, the thing with these guys is this is last year Jay Gruden was basically given a free pass. He was allowed to return and coach this team because they had too many injuries. And this year it's going to be interesting to see because they're actually more banged up this year than they were last year. And I think that anything short of a playoff appearance is what's going to get Jay Gruden fired.
I don't know. I feel like he's earned himself enough rope this year because of just how the injuries have piled up against him. Like they lost Darius Geis in the offseason. This team has been hammered by injuries the past 2 years. Do you really think he's in danger of losing his job?
I mean, there were reports last year saying, yeah, he might. But like I said, the front office, Bruce Allen and Co., they bought him back. They were like, listen, he had injuries, or this team was really injured this year, and he kept this team tremendously focused. I think that if he's allowed to return this year, you know, and he's the coach of the 2019 season, and they don't show considerable results after, you know, at the end of next year, then for sure he's a goner.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make. The last piece of news, a little bit smaller. Kelvin Benjamin let go by the Bills, and I will not miss Kelvin Benjamin. He is, in all senses, a worthless NFL wide receiver at this point. He's a jump ball guy. He doesn't have the speed or the hands or the route running ability you need to be a successful receiver in today's NFL. And I honestly don't see him getting a job unless it's with someone for depth going into the playoffs. But I'm kind of done with people talking about Kelvin Benjamin like he's this great number one wide receiver because he's not that.
Yeah, you know, like you said, I mean, at this point, I think, look, here's the thing. Kelvin Benjamin, I think someone's going to sign him, but they're going to bring him in. It's going to be later on in the 2019 offseason, and he will merely be brought in for depth purposes, and he's just going to be another training camp body. And, like, you know, it's honestly, it's his, he's on his last, his NFL career is honestly on its last legs. I mean, he's got, I think, one more year to prove himself, or even just one more training camp, but I seriously think that he's done in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean that's a fair point to make. All right. Now let's get to some of the games from Sunday. And man, there were quite a few good ones to talk about. The Ravens and the Falcons. I want to start there because the Falcons looked lost on offense for most of this game. The Ravens' defense is kind of back to being what it was earlier in the year, one of the league's best. And Lamar Jackson is, even though it's different, they're winning with him. Where are you at with this Ravens team right now? Are they a legitimate playoff contender?
You know, I think, but I'm gonna say because of their defense makes you think, yeah, they are a legitimate playoff contender, and I really think that this is a team that's gonna sneak into the playoffs as a wild card team. And I know the Ravens, they're always a tough team to play in the playoffs, but ultimately, I think it's gonna come down to how their quarterback plays over the next 4 weeks. You know, Lamar Jackson obviously has shown tons of promise, tons of potential, shutting up all those people and scouts that told him that he should try out at wide receiver or just be a wide receiver in the NFL. But I think, yeah, the Ravens, they're gonna really try and make some noise. And if they get into the playoffs, then they're not gonna go down without a fight, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this Ravens team has been so undersold all year long, and they are peaking at the right time. And I don't know. What do you think about these reports that Joe Flacco, though, is going to come back and split snaps with Lamar Jackson? I frankly don't think that's going to happen.
You know, if you look at the events that transpired in Baltimore prior to the draft, just, you know, forget the drafting of Lamar Jackson for a second here, is that the gentleman, Drazi Newsome, you know, this is his he's basically done Baltimore at the end of the year. These are his last four potential regular season games as the Ravens GM. And who's going to take over next year? Eric DaCosta. And so it's really fair to think that Lamar Jackson, he is the quarterback of the future. They traded back into the first round to get him. And that he's clearly, I think, an Eric DaCosta guy. I mean, if Flacco comes back, I really think they're going to make him earn the starting spot. I don't think that they're going to per se really consider moving on from him at the, next offseason or something, but I certainly think that it's something that's on the table because they're about to go into a new era.
Awesome. Yeah. I think that's an excellent point to be made there. Moving on to our next game. I want to talk about the Rams. No, I don't want to talk about the Rams and the Lions. I'll save that for our quarterback segment. The game I want to talk about is with your Chicago Bears against the New York Giants, and I'll just say this. I know that I'm going to give the Bears a pass on this one. Obviously, they had Chase Daniels. What I want to ask you, the reports say Trubisky's feeling fine. Is he going to start this week?
Yeah, so if I know a lot of people don't know the name Josh Bellamy, but he is a wide receiver for the Bears. He's been with this team since I think 2013 or 2014. But Josh Bellamy and Mitch Trubisky, some other Bears teammates, they were hanging out yesterday, and Mitch Trubisky was playing ping pong with his right arm. So, and I've been told by a few people as well that yeah, Mitch Trubisky's starting just based off those videos. Trubisky is absolutely starting Sunday night against the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, absolutely. Walk me through what went wrong in this game for the Bears.
Well, first things first, like you said, they're playing a backup quarterback, but just forget the fact that they were playing a backup quarterback. I really think most people went into this game and said, well, listen, the New York Giants are 3-8, the Chicago Bears are 8-3. The Bears are going to come out with their defense and they're just going to absolutely blow the Giants out. The Giants have crappy quarterback play. Listen, that was not at all the case. In the NFL, records do not matter. What you do on the field matters. You could be a 1-15 team or whatever, and you could beat some 14-2 team, whatever. But the reality of this is head coach Matt Nagy said that this himself in press conferences last week on Tuesday or Wednesday. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what he said was this, is that you forget the record, despite the fact that the New York Giants are 3-8. You look at the way they play; they've been in games for the most part. Which Nagy was basically telling people, listen, don't underestimate this team because despite their record, they have made some really good plays. Saquon, and they've got some really good players. Saquon Barkley did phenomenal. So did Odell Beckham. The defense stepped up when it needed to. So this was, I give the Giants an A plus for this because this was a game that everyone was counting them out and they just proved everyone wrong. And if you're a Giants fan and you're listening to this, if it's anything to take away, I know having a 3-8 record sucks. I know Eli Manning obviously has been slightly disappointing this year or just disappointing overall. But Giants fans, you guys are going to be on the rise and you're going to be a scary team to watch in a few years.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure if I agree with that. The defense has looked a little bit suspect over the past few weeks, and they played pardon me, Chase Daniels. I would not go that far as to say that the Giants are going to be a juggernaut in a few years. But this is certainly a good win for the Giants. But they kind of they're screwing themselves out of a quarterback. So, hopefully they stop winning because that would be bad for them in general. So yeah, that's kind of where I stand on the Giants. I don't really take them super seriously, no matter what. Taylor Gabriel, that was my bigger surprise in this game. He was really quiet. He did not get as many targets as he usually does. What happened there?
I really think, I mean, that if it's one thing I know about the Bears offense, it's that when Tariq Cohen and Taylor Gabriel are on the field at the same time, you just have this feeling that one of those two is going to get the ball, and it's going to be a play where it's probably going to end up being a short pass And because of Gabriel and Tariq Cohen's speed, it's going to turn into probably a long game. And the Giants, they did that very well, where they let Tariq Cohen get away, obviously, because Tariq Cohen single-handedly showed up in the fourth quarter and kept the Bears in the game. But they kept Taylor Gabriel in check all game, making sure that he would not get free. Because if you go back to 2016 when Gabriel was on the Atlanta Falcons, and even last year, 2017 as well, NFL defenses know when Taylor Gabriel gets the ball in open space, as fast as he is, he's going to be a very dangerous playmaker. So what the Giants did is they basically used their defensive backs like B.W. Webb. I know Landon Collins stepped in for a few plays. So did Janoris Jenkins. And they just shut Gabriel down completely.
Yeah, moving on to our next game, we have the Panthers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This was just a shocking performance from the Panthers, just in how bad it was. I'm awestruck how far this team has fallen in so few weeks, and it's not really because of their offense necessarily. Christian McCaffrey played good again in this game. Cam Newton had a bad day. He doesn't look healthy. And suddenly, I don't know. I just feel like I've been holding out hope with this Panthers team, but at this point, I don't think they're a playoff team.
Well, here's the thing. So about 4 weeks ago, about a month ago, the Carolina Panthers were sitting calmly at 6-2, right behind the New Orleans Saints in the NFC South. And I've been saying this all year, especially back in the offseason. I said, listen, there's going to be at least one division in the NFC that sends two or even three teams to the playoffs.
Grind in the middle.
And two of those guys are probably, and those final two teams are going to be wild card teams. Because you have your four division winners and then you have your two wild card teams. And I thought the Panthers would be that team to get in this year, right behind the Saints as probably a wild card team. But they have massively disappointed me over the last four games. And I don't know what it is, it just feels like it's a trend every year where we talk about the Carolina Panthers as being perennial Super Bowl contenders. And the first 6 or 7 games out of the season, they're dominating the competition. But then, when the games really matter in November and December, that's just when they begin to falter. I mean, this team right now is legitimately facing more questions than answers. And you look at this, that they basically bought in Norv Turner to fix the offense. And the offense has looked pretty decent this year, but when I look at it, hasn't been where some Panthers fans hyped it up to be.
Yeah, the offense has not been great this year. It at times has showed flashes. I'll give it that. They have been consistent at least. And I don't know, you say. I said that, but then as soon as I said it, I just remembered watching this team all year, and it's like, I don't know, dude. I don't think you're giving the offense enough credit because the offense has been spectacular. It's not the offense's problem. They've got weapons. DJ Moore's looked good. Devin Funchess has looked good. Christian McCaffrey has been a revelation and is the most underrated running back in the entire league right now. And Cam Newton's having a great year. It is the defense that has let this team down, in my opinion. And it's because their defensive line in general is old. And they lost their legs about a month and a half into the season, and suddenly the pass rush disappears from this team, and you're getting carved up by Jameis Winston. And I don't know, man. It just feels like the Panthers have a bigger problem, and that brings me to my question. Is Ron Rivera in danger of losing his job here if this team misses the playoffs?
At this point, I'd say there's a 50-50 chance he does. I know there are going to be some people out there and say, well, this is a defensive-minded coach. He should be getting the most out of his pass rush, even guys in the second and third string. And I do certainly agree with that Rivera should, considering he did work in Chicago for a few years with some big-time names like Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, Charles Tillman. I don't think any of Rivera's defenses in Carolina compared to what he built alongside Lovie Smith in Chicago. But I think when you really look at it, the other half of the argument is that, well, they're sort of, trying to figure things out. They don't have everyone they need, which I've had people tell that to me, and I think it's a completely terrible argument because they do have everything they need. This is a team that a few years ago went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Broncos, and they returned some starters, mostly front seven guys from that team. They signed Eric Reid this offseason. Or, I'm sorry, not this offseason, but a few weeks back, middle of the year, bought him in, and they needed safety depth. They have Dante Jackson, a guy who one of my colleagues, Jared Feinberg or Feinberg, has been saying, listen, he's legitimately progressing better than Josh Norman, but they just haven't lived up to expectations this year. And at some point, I think the blame is going to begin to fall on Ron Rivera if more and more people are going to start blaming him. And he, I think, eventually will be out of a job at the end of the year.
I don't think it's fair, but I kind of lean with you. If his team ends up missing the playoffs or continues to lose, I think he might be out of a job as well at the end of his year. Moving on to the next game I want to talk about here, which is the Vikings and the Patriots. And here it is. The Steelers lose, the Chiefs kind of struggle. And here are the Patriots in November taking care of business and 6 wins at home, no losses thus far this year.
Yeah, the Patriots are always really good at just defending, their home turf in Foxborough. And the thing is, if you're a Minnesota Vikings fan, you really have to be disappointed in your team because you have arguably one of the, this is a team that basically paid so much money to Kirk Cousins to bring him in and to win games like these. And Kirk has honestly not lived up to like that. Like $90 million contract that he got. I mean, I get they only lost 24-10, but I think part of the reason is because the defense did make some really nice plays and kept them in the game. The Vikings, despite their record, I still believe they have one of the better defensive units in the NFL. But if this Vikings team really wants to go over the top, then they need to get the offense going.
Yeah, I would say that they could the Vikings, the defense needs to step up for sure. The offense needs to do a lot better. But one thing I wanted to talk about here really quick was how interesting the Patriots attack has been this year, because they have really gone away from being this down the field passing team to this kind of heavy run mindset team that it's worked out well for them. You have Sony Michel rushing well. You have James White running well. Rex Burkhead is back from injury. James Devlin gets 4 carries and scores 2 touchdowns. Obviously, the classic Patriots running back game, where a guy comes out of nowhere and scores as many touchdowns as he can. And then you have Brady moving the ball down the field with 311 yards passing. I don't know. It feels like everyone this year is almost sleeping on the Patriots, and I feel like they are one of, if not the best team in the AFC still.
Yeah, I look at the Patriots and you say this, right? Is that they know how to take guys that were basically ineffective on one team. If you've heard the saying, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And that's essentially what the Patriots do. They take guys that don't fit in schemes on other teams or were not used properly, and they implement them into Bill Belichick's system, and boom, all of a sudden, they are doing really well. I think, I agree with you right there. The Patriots, they're a very tough. First off, the last few years, it just seems like, oh, they always start off slow. And there was, I think it was 2014 where they got blown out by the Chiefs 45-10 on Monday Night Football. And people were talking about, oh, well, the Brady Belichick era is over. But then I think that year they did go on to win the Super Bowl or something. And I think that people are still sleeping on the Patriots in light of how good the Chargers are doing, how the Steelers have been playing decent, and then the Chiefs, who have really been a big surprise contender to me this year. This New England team is one that you do not want to face in January.
Yeah, they are certainly not a team you want to face in January, and I just feel like people haven't given them a ton of a respect that they are frankly due, and they are a team, in my opinion, that needs to be considered a Super Bowl contender still, and I feel like everyone has kind of forgotten that a little bit. But that's your daily reminder to stay up on the New England Patriots, because they deserve your respect. All right. Chargers, Steelers. Oh, man. Let's talk about a team that I've been saying respect for a while. And the Chargers have almost always let me down. Not today. Not today. The Chargers are a legit team. They are a legit power in the AFC. They are a legit Super Bowl threat. They are, I will say it right now, playing better than the Kansas City Chiefs. They may give the Chiefs a run for their money for this division. I am so hyped about the Chargers, more so than I have been over any time I have in this entire podcast. I think they're going to win out. 13-3, here they come. Look out for the Los Angeles Chargers. And I do this every year, but I believe it more than most this year. The Los Angeles Chargers are going to be one of the final four teams in the NFL. They will make the AFC Conference Championship. And that is my take today. I mean, even without Melvin Gordon, they're able to find Jared Jackson, who comes in and runs fantastically, and Phillip Rivers is able to have a great game, and they're able to come back, and you think, oh, this team's done, they're out of it, it's 23-10, oh, wait, this is not the same old Chargers. Chargers ain't gonna charge you, you said. The Chargers are a real team, and I love it.
Yeah, you know, the Los Angeles Chargers, they've really surpassed my expectations this year as well, because the thing is this. See, I don't know what it is, but it just feels like every single year we talk about the Los Angeles Chargers being Super Bowl contenders, but then they never stay healthy and someone gets hurt. This year, obviously, been massively different. I really think that the Chargers have the firepower, you know. They have Melvin Gordon there as their primary guy. They've got, but then they have really good running backs in Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson to back things up. Play that sort of number two role. Then they have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, as well as a great 1-2 wide receiver punch. The defense has honestly been playing phenomenal. The defensive backs, I think, are the most underrated parts of that team. You know, Derwin James has been playing absolutely out of his mind this year. I'm still puzzled as to how he fell all the way to number 17 in the NFL draft, because I actually had him as a top 10 pick going back to June of 2017 when I started digging into the NFL draft class. And then 2016 fifth round pick, Desmond King from Iowa, defensive back. He's been playing awesome as well. The Chargers, they can make some serious noise, you know, bearing that no one goes down with injury over the next 4 weeks. And Phillip Rivers, obviously, he's my pick for MVP this year because he's been playing really good.
Oh, my. I don't know about that. That's a pretty hot take. I think that people who throw in Rivers in the MVP debate are just being kind to Rivers, because, I don't know. He's looked good the last few weeks, for sure. But I am just going to say this right now. I think that the MVP is between Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes. And I don't really think there's a third right now. But, I mean, that is certainly a take that we think that we might be interested in hearing and that we did hear. But I don't know. Why do you think he deserves MVP?
I mean, I think if anything, you know, people want to talk about, well, listen, the Chargers are healthy and that's why they're finally playing great football. But the reality of it is this, is that Philip Rivers, I think, is the main key behind that. I mean, you know, he was there for a few years and they had some down years, and people sort of thought, well, Philip Rivers is done, the Chargers are done. And I don't think that that's been the case at all. What you've seen these last, like, 2 years from them, you know, I really think that they are a serious contender. And I think that Philip Rivers, hopefully, he can finally get that first Super Bowl ring that's, you know, eluded him so much throughout his career.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he gets that Super Bowl ring too. But again, I think it's between Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes. All right, want to quickly touch on the Browns Texans. The Texans are so good right now, and I don't know, man. Like, it just feels like they are a team of destiny. They might be the other team playing in that AFC Finals game. Do you think that's crazy to say that this it's time to start taking the Texans as more than a playoff contender and maybe a Super Bowl contender?
Well, for right here, here's the thing, right? To answer your question, I'm gonna label this team as a playoff contender right now. Look, I mean, they're like whatever. They're 8-3 or 9-3 or something. I know they're gonna get into the playoffs, but it's probably likely gonna be as a wild card team. You know, for them to be Super Bowl contenders, they need to show up in January, because and the reason I'm saying they're only playoff contenders is because Deshaun Watson obviously has never played in the playoffs, and that's when you're going to need him to step up the most. I mean, I was actually really wary because the Texans started like 1-3 or something. I'm like, look, if this or 1-4, I was like, Bill O'Brien needs to be like fired or something ASAP, because he's what's holding this team back, and they've proven me wrong, you know. But I really think that they need to really show up in the playoffs, and whoever they play, I believe that they're going to give them a run for their money. But at the end of the day, it's just going to come down to whoever's going to make the smarter plays.
Yeah, it does come down to who makes the smarter plays, but at the same time, Deshaun Watson is still really freaking good. And I don't know. I just feel like this team deserves a little bit more respect than some people give them. And I do think that they could be a legitimate contender in the AFC, and there are a ton of legitimate contenders in the AFC, which I don't think anyone really expected this year. But I think it's gonna be really interesting to see how this plays out for the Texans, because I just believe that Deshaun Watson has taken the next step and that he's playing like a top 10 quarterback right now. And I don't think we're going to lose. On the other side, Baker Mayfield, three interceptions, but he put up a ton of yardage and looked really good in the second half and bounced back really well. Browns, of course, continue to look like a team with a ton of promise around them. Finally, I want to talk about my Denver Broncos and just make it official. This team's going to run the table. They are going to go 10-6, and I don't know if you think that's correct or not, but I believe that as a fact. This team's going 10-6.
I mean, here's my thoughts on the Broncos. You know, okay, first off, John Elway, and I know you admitted this yourself, but this dude sucks at evaluating the quarterback position, which is why he went out and threw money at Case Keenum when he should have probably selected Josh Rosen with the 5th overall pick. But the Bradley Chubb pick that he got was great. I feel like the Broncos rookie class, Royce Freeman, Philip Lindsay, Courtland Sutton, and Bradley Chubb, you know, they've all been doing really well. And I am excited for the future of this Broncos team. I feel like, yeah, they can run the table, you know, because you go look a few weeks back, you know, when I think they were like 2-4 or something, or they beat the Arizona Cardinals, and no one was expecting this team to even be in the playoffs. People were like, oh, well, Vance Joseph needs to get fired. And I did hear some stuff from people saying that Joseph was potentially going to get fired, or he was for sure going to get fired. It was just a matter of when and not if. But really, Joseph's proven me wrong. And I think that, yeah, the Broncos, I know you know their next few games, but I seriously think that they can, without a doubt, be a at least sneak into the AFC as the AFC playoff picture as a 6 seed.
Yeah, I think they can too. I worry about the Ravens just because I think they're going to keep winning as well. But outside of the Ravens, the Colts, I don't want to talk about them for a while because I've been singing their praises for a while, but I realized they had a very bad game. I think they'll bounce back, but I'm not as confident in the Colts anymore. I think it is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, just because everything in the AFC is pretty much set outside of that sixth seed. And now there are all these games between big teams that are in the playoffs, kind of to determine seeding. There are a lot of great kind of AFC games coming up here in the next few weeks. It's a truly very entertaining conference right about now.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, you know, like I said, you said the, you know, I know you mentioned like 30 seconds ago, you think the Broncos can run the table. And I'm looking at their final four games right now. And here are going to be my predictions. I believe that they beat the 49ers. I know Pierce isn't going to like hearing this, but I seriously think they're going to beat the Browns. They're going to beat the Raiders, so that's 3-0 right there. And then that fourth one, I think that the Chargers are going to rest their starters on the 30th of December. And I think the Broncos steal that win at home.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a possibility and something I think will happen. I just, the pass rush for the Denver Broncos is too good right now. Von Miller and Bradley Chubb have put up something like 25 combined sacks, which is insane. So I just feel like the Broncos defense is too good for that. And that transfers us nicely into the final thing we're going to talk about today. I wrote a piece on my blog, the drama of it all, sportsblog.com, earlier today about quarterbacks who need to have a strong second half. Not second half, but a strong last stretch of the season. And I want to kind of go back and forth here and each of us maybe give one or two picks about who we think has a lot to prove with the end of the season coming up. And it doesn't have to be someone on my list. So I'll start with you. Who do you think has a lot to prove coming down the stretch here?
Well, if anything for me, you know, it's my own quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky. Listen, people talk all the time. I mean, listen, here's the thing. I hear Bears fans on Twitter all the time talk about how, oh, Mitch Trubisky's on the rise. And I do acknowledge the fact that he is. But the reality of it is this, and I know I said this on the last podcast episode as well, is that when Mitchell Trubisky plays against bad defenses like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or average defenses like the Buffalo Bills or the New York Jets, he plays good. He plays up to number two overall expectations. But then when he plays teams like, or good defenses like the Minnesota Vikings, that is where he sort of flops. I mean, he had two picks, you know, he had two interceptions in the game against the Vikings that he played a few weeks back. And he is really the key to this Bears team unlocking their potential. With the Los Angeles Rams coming to town on Sunday night, it's going to be very interesting to see which Mitchell Trubisky we see. Do we see the confident Mitch Trubisky that's going to make plays, or do we see the Mitchell Trubisky that occasionally will show flashes throughout the game, but just not quite enough to get the Bears over the hump, and then the Bears are probably going to have to rely on their defense to win that game for them?
I agree. Mitchell Trubisky, to me, has been meh. Is Mitchell Trubisky bad? No. I don't think he's bad. I think he's okay. But I just don't know if I envision him leading a team to a Super Bowl or not. And I feel like he does still have a lot to prove. But luckily for him, he's got a great head coach and some great wide receivers and running backs and an awesome defense behind him. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't had that game where you're like, oh yeah, that's the Mitchell Trubisky game. That's the game where he looks like a top 10 quarterback. Would you agree with that?
I mean, listen, he tossed six touchdowns back in week four against Tampa Bay Buccaneers and put an end to Fitzmagic. But even that, you have to realize the Buccaneers went into that game as the third ranked scoring offense, but they were also like 30th in terms of points allowed on defense. The absolute worst in one of the leagues. The reality of it is this, is if people want to gain, you know, especially the national media, if people want to start, people outside of Chicago, if they want to start calling Mitchell Trubisky quarterback on the rise and a top 10 quarterback, then what he needs to do is he needs to start winning big games against elite teams. You know, he needs, like, this Sunday, like I said, it's going to be a really big test, because if he comes out and the Bears beat the Rams and he makes some real key plays, then the national media can begin to shut up about Trubisky. But until he does that, until he wins those games that really matter, because Sunday night's going to have playoff seeding implications, until then he's just going to be a, you know, considered by most to be an above average quarterback.
Yeah, the first one I'll go with is a quarterback of my team, since you went with a quarterback of your team, Case Keenum. I've long been a respect Case Keenum guy, but there comes a point where every amateur sports podcaster has to ask himself, is this take worth it? And I'm kind of at that point with Case Keenum. And is Case Keenum worth it? Because I don't really know what Case Keenum is at this point. And he needs to have a strong finish because the roster around him is actually really good. And I'm going to defend John Elway, which is weird. John Elway had an awesome draft class. He hit on everything. Deshaun Hamilton has been a success. Cortland Sutton's been a success. Royce Freeman's been a success. Philip Lindsay's... Now, you can't directly give credit to Elway for that one, but he has been an overwhelming success. And Bradley Chubb has obviously been a success. And then you look at guys like Isaac Yiadom out of this draft class, who was able to shut down Antonio Brown. And suddenly, this team around Case Keenum looks like a team that's a playoff team and a team that could maybe make some noise and get an upset in the playoffs. But it really depends on what Case Keenum is. And if he can't do it this year, the Broncos, the way his contract is, they could cut him. They could part ways with Case Keenum after this year. And maybe at this point you are just a quarterback away from being a serious contender in the AFC. And I don't know. A lot is gonna... His numbers haven't been great this year. He's got 10 interceptions thus far. I believe he only has 16 touchdowns. He hasn't looked like someone who will win you a game. And I think if he can win some games down the stretch, that'll tell us a lot about whether Case Keenum is worth it for the Broncos or not. Because if you put an average quarterback with a great surrounding team over and over and over again, if you're John Elway, something's got to change. You got to go after a quarterback, whoever you can find this year in the offseason. You got to trade some capital. You got to find a guy that can take you to the next level. But if Case Keenum can't be that guy, they got to figure that out over the next four games.
Yeah, you know, looking at the quarterback situation in Denver, I mean, I think that Case Keenum's going to be their starter in 2019, and then hopefully 2020 they draft Tua Tagovailoa or Jake Fromm, one of those two that are coming out of Alabama and Georgia respectively. You know, going to obviously Keenum, to me, he's played all right this year, but I don't think that, you know, he's done well enough to that if the Broncos were to move on from him, that he'd automatically come in and some team would be confident enough handing him a deal to make them their starting quarterback.
Yeah, the Case Keenum experiment is taking its toll on me. I'm not quite sure what to think about the guy anymore. Who is another guy that has something to prove down the stretch here?
That's a great question, and I'm going to stick with the NFC North and go with Kirk Cousins. Like I said, this is a guy that got a massive contract, but he's been a really big disappointment. And the Vikings, listen, the Vikings bought Kirk Cousins in because they were 60 minutes away from the NFC, or sorry, from representing the NFC in the Super Bowl last year, and they just got absolutely annihilated. I really think that Kirk Cousins needs to step up and play really good these next four games, because if the Vikings unlock their potential, then you could argue they're about as complete of a team in the NFC and as good as the Rams or the Saints or even the dark horse Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I think the thing with Cousins is his stats have been okay, actually. I was looking at them earlier today while writing this piece. But he just hasn't been consistent. 1 week he outduels Aaron Rodgers on Sunday Night Football, and then the next he's struggling to beat a, let's face it, middle of the road New England defense. It's just a really interesting dynamic with this Minnesota offense that has seemed to kind of stall over the past few weeks. And it might not be all Cousins. It might be John DeFilippo has run out of ideas, or the offense isn't coming together as well because of him. But it just seems like Cousins doesn't have that it factor that you want a guy that you spend $90 million on to have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, really, when the Chicago, I'm sorry, when the Vikings won Kirk Cousins this year, I for sure had them winning the division, but they honestly have not run away with this year. I get their tough schedule plays a part into that, but really, you know, the Vikings, they've been a disappointment this year, and I think that anything less than another NFC Championship game appearance is really going to cost Mike Zimmer his job.
Oof. I wouldn't say that. I'd say the bar's been lowered a little bit. I'd say they have to make the playoffs, or else they might consider taking his job. I think asking them to make the NFC Championship this year is a lot to ask.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Vikings, they, you know, I think if they do get it going playoff time, then they can be dangerous. But as of right now, they're really looking like a team that's barely holding on for a playoff spot. And I think that one key situation to look at about the NFC North over the next 4 weeks is that if the Bears win two more games, then they basically lock up the NFC North, which guarantees them a playoff spot. So, and I'm not saying the Bears are going to absolutely run the table here, because it's the NFL, anything can happen. But the
Yeah,
Vikings,
absolutely.
they know that the next.
Yeah, I agree. Continue with your point. Sorry, you cut out for a second.
You know, I really think that it's a critical next 4 weeks for the Vikings. I know this coming week they're playing the Seahawks on Monday night. The Seahawks obviously have been better than we all expected. And then the NFC North, I think in all likelihood, is going to come down to week 17 when the Bears and Vikings play in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm not sure I believe in the Vikings that much. I really do think this is a Bears year, and this is their division to lose. I don't see, I don't see him coming back, to be honest with you. All right. Finally, last but not least, I'll bring up my guy, Derek Carr, who for the year he has had, and for having no people around him, has had a decent year. If he has a strong final quarter, I think it's good for Derek Carr, because I honestly think if he has a strong last quarter, they could trade him for a first or second round pick. What do you think about that? Because let me pull up his stats again really quick, because I was looking at him earlier today, and they are not awful. They are decent statistics. He has had 3,112 yards, 16 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He hasn't had a single game with, he has had one game with more than two interceptions, and that was against the Rams. And most of the weeks, he's turnover free, and he's able to score the ball, and he had his best performance of the year just barely against the Chiefs. I don't know. I think Derek Carr gets a lot of unwarranted hate. I think he's a franchise quarterback. And I feel like if he plays well down the stretch, that could change a lot for him, because maybe if he does that, the Raiders say, it's time for a change of scenery for this guy. We want to go all in on a rebuild, and they send him out of town.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I know a few weeks back, Jason Lockenfor, who I don't consider to be a very reliable source, since you said that Derek Carr could be on a different team when the scouting combine's going on. You know, and then you've got John Gruden, who said, well, you know, Derek Carr is my starting quarterback of the future, and he's not going anywhere. It's tough to trust anything that you hear about the Raiders nowadays, because, you know, I don't think many expected them to trade Amari Cooper, but they did because they got a first rounder. Derek Carr, I think, yeah, if he does do really well, then I think the Raiders would consider shipping him out. But the problem there is, because he would have some pretty nice trade value, but there's two problems. His contract, because he signed a massive extension a few years back, and I think he makes like $25 million or something, his contract would obviously be a problem. And then the second problem that you have would be that there aren't many teams in the NFL that I look at that say, well, they absolutely need a new starting quarterback. Maybe the New York Giants obviously is one team that comes to mind, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well. But beyond that, teams just don't have a need as of right now, an immediate need to get a new starting quarterback.
Yeah. It's just... It's a tough situation in Oakland, but I do think it'd be best if Derek Carr just got a fresh start somewhere else, and I think he can get that if he plays well down the stretch, because I think they will move him. All right, that'll do it, I think, for today, you said, unless you have anything to leave us with.
I mean, obviously, just usual stuff, guys. You can find me on Twitter at UsaidKulshul. I know the holiday season's coming up, so I am working on a special project for one of the websites I write for Full Press Coverage, which I'll be releasing stuff basically starting December 16th and well into the new year, so it'll be cool stuff to check out. And then hopefully the next time I'm on here, we're doing another NFL draft preview.
Oh, absolutely, and you know, we want to have you on before then, too, because you said, as I often say, you are our smartest football guest, and that's not a shot at the other guests. You say just grinds more tape than me, I think, even though I grind a lot of tape. I respect no one's football mind more than you say, Koshal, man.
I respect no one's football mind than yours for letting me be on your show and basically making me your go-to guest, man.
Yeah. For sure, man. No worries about it. Any old time. All right, we will be back Friday with a recap. Well, not a recap. That's not how time works. With a preview of Week 13 and maybe Mark Magana from the Full Press Coverage Buccaneers podcast. Who knows? Alrighty, I will see you next time, Usaid. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.